Welcome to the Microgreens World Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Microgreens World for Monday, March 16, 2025. Today we're diving into something that's been generating a lot of buzz, both literally and figuratively, nanoplastic and microplastic uptake in microgreens. We've seen some really interesting research showing that microgreens, those little nutrient powerhouses, can actually absorb nano and microplastics through their root systems.
Yeah, and it's not just a one-size-fits-all situation either. The uptake seems to vary depending on the specific variety of microgreens we're talking about. There's this investigation by Andrew Neves, really fascinating work, that confirms these tiny particles are actually entering our food system, you know, through the plants we eat.
And as you can imagine, there are some growing concerns because, well, scientists are still trying to figure out exactly what kind of impact these microplastics might have on human health in the long run.
Right. And, you know, it really hits home when you think about those questions we've received recently from listeners, like that microgreens community member down in Florida who reached out a while back. And then more recently, our partner who was curious about this whole thing.
Yeah, they both wanted to know, are these tiny plastics really ending up in something as seemingly pure as our microgreens?
Absolutely. And it makes sense, right? I mean, it's a valid concern and definitely something we need to unpack together.
It definitely is. And before we go any further, I think it's important to make sure everyone's on the same page when it comes to the terminology. So when we talk about nanoplastics, we're talking about incredibly small particles.
Like unbelievably small.
Exactly. We're talking about particles that are smaller than 1,000 nanometers. And to give you some context, a nanometer is thousands of times smaller than a human hair.
It's like trying to imagine a grain of sand on a beach. It's almost impossible to fathom just how tiny these things really are.
Now, microplastics are a bit bigger than nanoplastics, but still pretty darn small. We're talking about fragments that are under 5 millimeters in size. It's still very, very tiny.
Yeah, and that size difference is important, but both of them, both nano and microplastics, can pose potential issues.
Okay, so we've got these tiny, almost invisible pieces of plastic, and somehow they're ending up in our microgreens. So the big question is, how is this happening?
Right. And it's not like someone's out there deliberately sprinkling microplastics onto their microgreen trays.
Definitely not.
It's more about those unintentional sources, the things we might not even realize are contributing to this problem. And one of the biggest culprits, according to the research, is those synthetic growing mats that a lot of people use for their microgreens.
You mean those mats made out of, like, plastic fibers?
Exactly. You see, the roots of those baby greens are in direct contact with this material throughout their entire growth cycle. And over time, these mats can shed these microscopic fibers, and those fibers end up right where the plants are absorbing all their nutrients and water.
So basically, the roots are intertwined with these plastic fibers. And it's kind of inevitable that some of those particles are going to end up inside the plants.
Right. It's like if you were constantly surrounded by dust particles, eventually you'd probably breathe some in. Same idea here.
Makes sense. Yeah. So if someone's growing microgreens at home, what are some better choices for a growing medium that wouldn't have this issue?
Well, the research points to natural alternatives being a much safer bet. Things like coconut coir, hemp, or jute are all great options.
I've definitely heard of coconut coir being used for gardening.
Yeah, it's pretty popular. And switching to those natural materials is a really simple way to eliminate that direct plastic contact from the get-go.
It's kind of like choosing organic produce over conventionally grown stuff. You're cutting out a potential source of contamination right at the source.
Exactly. It's all about minimizing risk, right?
Absolutely. Okay, so we've talked about the growing medium as a potential source of these microplastics. What else is on the list?
Well, another big one is water. It's almost like a sneaky little Trojan horse because, you know, we think of water as this pure life-giving element, which it is. But the water we use to nourish our microgreens can actually be contaminated with these tiny particles before it even reaches our plants.
So you're saying even the water source itself could be an issue?
It can be, unfortunately. Depending on where your water comes from and the treatment process it goes through, there's a chance that it could contain some level of microplastics already.
Wow, I never thought about that.
Yeah, and it doesn't stop there. Even if your initial water source is relatively clean, you have to think about the journey that water takes before it gets to your plants. It travels through pipes, sits in reservoirs, maybe even stored in containers, and all of those things have the potential to introduce more microplastics into the water supply.
So it's like there are all these potential points of contamination along the way.
Right. And then once that water reaches your microgreens, what happens?
Well, the plants absorb it through their roots.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Those microplastics in the water aren't just staying put on the surface of the roots. They can easily be absorbed by the roots and travel all the way up into the edible parts of the plant, the shoots.
So it's not like rinsing the microgreens before eating is going to solve the problem.
Nope, not really. These particles are getting inside the plant tissue itself.
So what can microgreen growers do about this water issue? Is there any way to make sure the water they're using is clean?
The most effective strategy is to implement some kind of water filtration system. This adds a barrier that can significantly reduce the amount of microplastics getting into the water supply in the first place.
So like having a dedicated filter just for the water used for growing microgreens.
Yeah, exactly. And it's important to think about all stages of watering, from the source to the containers you're using.
Right, because even if you're filtering the water at the source, if you're then storing it in a plastic container that could potentially leach microplastics, you're basically undoing all that good work.
Exactly. So choosing non-plastic containers for every step of the process is a really important consideration too.
Okay, so growing medium, water, what else should we be thinking about when it comes to potential sources of microplastic contamination?
Well, believe it or not, the air we breathe can also be a source of these particles. Especially if you're growing microgreens in an urban or industrial area, there's a higher chance that there are microplastics floating around in the air. And these tiny particles can settle right onto the delicate shoots of your plants.
So it's like they're coming at the plants from all angles, the soil, the water, the air.
Yeah, pretty much. But there are things you can do to minimize that airborne exposure. One simple but effective strategy is to cover your growing areas. This creates a physical barrier that can help to prevent those airborne particles from settling on your microgreens.
So like having a mini greenhouse setup or something.
Yeah, something like that. It doesn't have to be anything fancy, but just having a cover can make a big difference. And then finally, even if you're using soil as a growing medium, it's important to remember that soil can actually harbor plastic pollutants too.
You mean from things like plastic mulch or debris that breaks down over time?
Exactly. And if your soil is contaminated with microplastics, there's a chance that your microgreens will absorb those particles through their roots as well. So choosing certified organic soil or growing mediums that have been screened for contaminants is really important.
Okay, so it sounds like we've got a pretty comprehensive list of potential entry points for these microplastics into the microgreen world. We've got the growing mats, the water, the containers, the air, and even the soil itself. It's almost like we're surrounded by these tiny particles, and they're finding their way into our food supply through these various pathways.
It's definitely something to be mindful of.
Absolutely. So once these microplastics do manage to get inside a microgreen plant, what happens next? How do they actually move from the roots up to the shoots?
Well, it's all about the plant's vascular system. Think of it like the plant's internal highway system. The roots are the entry point, and then the microplastics basically hitch a ride on this highway and travel upwards to the shoots, which of course are the parts we eat.
And earlier, we mentioned that research has shown that somewhere between 13 and 18% of the microplastics absorbed by the roots actually make it all the way up to the shoots. That seems like a surprisingly significant amount. But then again, maybe not as high as it could be, right?
That's a really interesting point. And it suggests that the plants do have some sort of natural filtration system in place. The roots seem to be acting like a barrier, trapping a large percentage of those microplastics and preventing them from reaching the rest of the plant.
So it's not like the plants are just passively letting everything flow through.
Not at all. It seems like they're putting up a fight. And this has some practical implications, too. You know, most microgreen growers already harvest their greens by cutting them well above the growing medium. And this practice likely helps to reduce our potential exposure to microplastics because those particles are more concentrated in the root zone.
So cutting higher up is a good strategy for minimizing intake.
It seems that way, yes. However, we have to remember that this natural filtration system isn't foolproof. There's other research out there looking at leafy greens like pak choi and radish that shows that microplastics can still reach the edible parts of those plants. So while there's definitely a concentration gradient, meaning more microplastics in the roots and less in the shoots, it's not a complete block.
Okay, so the plants are taking in these microplastics, moving some of them upwards, but they're also putting up a bit of a fight. What does that mean for the plant itself? How is it responding to the presence of these foreign particles?
Well, the research shows that microgreens actually activate what we call stress response pathways when they're exposed to microplastics.
Stress response pathways, meaning they're basically freaking out a bit.
In a way, yes, but it's a good freak out. It means they're recognizing the threat and trying to deal with it. And what's really interesting is that these stress responses are very similar to the responses they have when they're exposed to things like heavy metals. It's like they're using the same tools to deal with different kinds of environmental stressors.
So their defense system is kicking in. What does that actually look like?
Well, one of the key things they do is increase their production of antioxidants. This is thought to help protect the plants from the potential damage that those microplastics could cause at a cellular level.
So like, oh crap, there's something weird in here. Better boost our defenses.
Exactly. And the fact that only a relatively small percentage of those microplastics actually make it up to the shoots, that also suggests that the plants are strategically trying to contain the threat. It's like they're prioritizing the protection of their most important parts, the leaves and stems, by keeping those microplastics trapped in the root system as much as possible.
Almost like a biological security system, saying, okay, you can hang out down here in the roots, but you're not getting any closer to the vital organs.
That's a great analogy. And the plant's vascular system, that internal highway system we talked about, seems to be playing a key role in this containment effort. It's like a checkpoint, selectively allowing particles to pass through based on their size and charge.
So it's not a perfect system, but it's doing its best to keep those microplastics in check.
Exactly. And what's remarkable is that these plants are essentially repurposing their existing defense mechanisms, the ones they evolved to deal with natural threats, to deal with this whole new challenge of microplastic pollution. It really speaks to their adaptability.
It's pretty incredible when you think about it.
Oh.
Okay, so we've talked about how the plants are taking in these microplastics, how they're moving through the plant, and how the plants are responding. But now we have to talk about us. What do we know about how eating microgreens that contain microplastics might affect human health?
This is where things get a bit more complicated and honestly a bit unsettling. The science is still pretty young in this area, but what we do know is that these microplastics can cross biological barriers in the human body.
What do you mean by biological barriers?
Well, think of it like this. Our bodies have these natural barriers that are designed to protect our organs and tissues from harmful substances. Like our skin is a barrier, our gut lining is a barrier, the blood-brain barrier is a barrier.
Right, those are all things that are supposed to keep the bad stuff out.
Exactly. But these microplastics, because they're so small, they can potentially slip past those barriers and end up in places they shouldn't be, like in our organs or even in our brains.
That's not good.
No, it's not. And we're still trying to figure out exactly what that means for our health in the long run.
So what are the main concerns right now?
Well, one big concern is something called bioaccumulation.
Bioaccumulation, meaning what exactly?
It basically means that over time, these microplastics can build up in our bodies. It's not like you eat a microgreen salad today and suddenly you're full of plastic. But if you're consistently consuming food that contains microplastics, those particles can start to accumulate in your tissues. And we don't know what kind of long-term effects that could have.
So it's like a slow burn kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And there's also research going on into how these microplastics might interfere with normal cellular functions. You know, our cells are constantly doing all these incredibly complex things to keep us alive, and these tiny pieces of plastic could potentially disrupt those processes.
So it's not just about the plastic itself being in our bodies. It's also about the potential for it to mess with how our bodies work at a very fundamental level.
Right. And there's still a lot we don't know. But I think the research that's been done so far is definitely enough to raise some serious concerns about the implications for food safety.
Okay, so given all of this, what can microgreen growers do to minimize the risk of microplastic contamination in their products?
Well, as we talked about earlier, switching to natural growing mediums is a huge one. Getting rid of those plastic mats and replacing them with things like coconut coir or hemp, that's a really effective way to reduce the amount of microplastics that are getting into the plants in the first place.
And that seems like a pretty easy switch to make, right?
It is. It's a relatively straightforward change that can have a big impact. And it's not just about the growing medium either. Growers also need to be thinking about their water sources, their containers, and their harvesting practices. It's about taking a holistic approach and looking for ways to reduce plastic contamination at every stage of the process.
So it's like creating a multi-layered defense system against microplastics.
Exactly. And those simple steps like filtering water, using non-plastic containers, and establishing a plastic-free harvest zone, those can all add up to make a real difference. And, for consumers, it's about supporting growers who are taking these steps.
Right, voting with our dollars and choosing to buy from companies that are prioritizing clean and sustainable practices. Okay, so as we wrap things up here, what are some of the big questions that still need to be answered in this area? What kind of research is still needed to give us a better understanding of this whole microplastic issue?
Well, one area that's getting a lot of attention is the development of more sensitive and accurate methods for detecting and measuring microplastics in both the environment and in food products. Right now, it's not always easy to determine exactly how much microplastic is present in a given sample.
So we need better tools to track these particles.
Exactly. And then once we have a better grasp of the levels of microplastic contamination, we can start to conduct more robust studies on the potential health effects. We need to figure out what happens to those microplastics once they're inside the human body. Do they accumulate in certain organs? Do they cause inflammation or damage? Do they interact with other substances in the body? These are all questions that need to be addressed.
So there's a lot more work to be done.
There is, but it's happening. And in the meantime, I think the most important thing is to be aware of the issue and to take steps to minimize our exposure as much as possible.
Right. Knowledge is power. And the more we understand about this issue, the better equipped we'll be to make informed choices for ourselves and for our families.
Absolutely. And it's not all doom and gloom either. There are some really interesting research avenues being explored right now that offer some hope for the future. For example, scientists are looking into the possibility of developing plants that can actually break down microplastics.
Whoa, that's amazing. So, like plants that could actually clean up the plastic pollution.
That's the idea. And then
Yeah.
there's also research being done on how to modify plant roots to make them even more effective at filtering out microplastics.
So, kind of like giving the plants a super boost to their natural defense systems.
Exactly. So while there's definitely cause for concern, there's also reason to be optimistic that we can find solutions to this problem.
That's good to hear. Okay, so to wrap up this deep dive, what's the key takeaway message for our listeners?
I think the main message is that this issue of microplastics in microgreens is complex and evolving, but it's something that we all need to be aware of and take seriously. As consumers, we can make choices to support growers who are prioritizing clean growing practices. And as a community, we need to continue pushing for more research and better regulations to address this growing problem.
Absolutely. And as we continue to explore the incredible world of microgreens, I think it's crucial to remember that the health of our plants is inextricably linked to the health of our planet and the health of our bodies.
Well said.
Thanks for joining us today for this deep dive. We hope you found it informative and empowering. Until next time, happy growing.